First case this morning is Lohman v. State Farm Mutual Insurance. You may approach. Are you Ms. DeLuca?
I'm Donna Colley.
I'm sorry.
Like more interesting name, DeLuca. I can take that all day.
I'm totally confused already this morning, so.
Maybe that will work to our advantage.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. So my name is Donna Colley, C-O-L-L-E-Y. I'm an attorney with Ronald J. Palagi. I resist the urge to say we're on your side, but it just came out, so I apologize. I'm here on behalf of Opal Lohman and David Lohman, the appellants in this case, and the plaintiffs below. This case is an underinsured motorist case against State Farm Insurance. It went to the jury. The jury found in favor of our client, Ms. Lohman, and awarded no damages. There are many cases in Nebraska that appear to address this issue, but I believe ours is rather unique in that the manner in which the jury instructions were written and the way the jury found. The jury instructions clearly told the jury that they should find for our client only if they found that the accident was the proximate cause of some damage to the plaintiff. They then found for the plaintiff. So we start out with facts where a jury has found that, yes, the plaintiff suffered some damages. Then they turned around and ordered zero. And it's our position that when by a verdict a party is entitled to recover some money from an adverse party, the jury, under the statute, Nebraska Revised Statute 25-1119, must assess the amount and give some recovery.
At the during the closing argument, didn't the plaintiff's counsel argue, if you find there was no pain and suffering, return a zero verdict?
He did argue, from my understanding of the facts, particularly as recited by the appellee, he made the argument that you should not find for my client if you don't believe her, to that effect. If you think she's lying, malingering, faking, you shouldn't return a verdict in her favor.
And there was there were no specials, correct?
My recollection from the facts, Your Honor, is that there was a stipulation or a motion in limine to keep out any medical bills being offered, if I'm not mistaken.
And there were no lost wages.
I think that is correct, Your Honor.
So the only thing the jury could have awarded was pain and suffering.
I believe that would be correct, Your Honor.
And if they were told, if you don't find that there is any pain and suffering, you don't believe that there was any pain and suffering, return a zero verdict.
Well, I think what the jury instructions told them, and what we have to go with, if they could have taken care of that, the jury could have read the jury instruction, and it said, do you believe the accident was a proximate cause of some damage to the plaintiffs? And they thought back on what plaintiff's attorney said. They said, if we don't believe her, that she didn't have any damages, that she's feigning, the answer is, then I find for the defendant, because I have to, in order to find for the plaintiff, I have to conclude that there was some damages. So obviously they didn't believe plaintiff's attorney, or they would have entered a verdict on behalf of the defendant. The jury instructions specifically said, if you find some damages, you're finding for the plaintiff.
What about the verdict form? Is there more than one verdict form, or was there only one?
That's a good question. You know, one of the cases that the appellee cites, it's a non-published case, is similar in that the court brings up the fact was there more than one verdict form. I don't believe the court has before it. If I'm not mistaken, you only have the one verdict form. As far as I know, there was only that one, and they entered a zero on it.
Well, the form itself says, we, the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above cause, do fine for said plaintiffs, and there's no, the form almost makes the jury come to that conclusion, does it not?
Well, Your Honor, I think that would have been a matter for the attorneys to bring up with the judge at the time of the trial. Nobody objected to either the jury instructions or the form of the verdict. What we have before us now, it's almost akin to the, we don't have canons of construction for jury verdicts. What we have instead is a rule of law that says that if a jury says that a plaintiff is entitled to some damages, that the jury has to then give the party some damages. We don't, if we were going to, I guess, have rules of construction, it wouldn't be the holistic or the parole evidence. It would be the four corners of the document. And we look
was
at the
instruction
jury,
an incorrect statement of the law? In that you could find negligence but no damage?
Well, the parties had stipulated to liability in the case. Mm-hmm. So the way the instruction is written, it can lead to the result that we have.
Well, how are we using all these words? Is the instruction a correct statement of the law?
Well, I think it's a correct statement of the law for this case. I mean, I think the one we have before us is the law of the case. This is the instruction that we're left to deal with. No one objected to it. And now what we have is a jury saying that, yes, this plaintiff proved that she had some damages.
Well,
and
did the defendant admit negligence, or did the defendant admit liability?
They admitted negligence on the part of the, remember, this is a case within a case. We have an underlying motor vehicle accident, right. And State Farm admitted that their insured was negligent.
Well, in your view, is that where this went off the rails? It was an admission of negligence, but not an admission of liability?
Well, you know,
or contrary-wise, that would be to your favor.
And that could be so, Your Honor. I guess where I am left is that while we might have preferred that the jury instruction read differently, and perhaps this case is very instructive to judges as we go forward as to what can happen, what we're left with in this case is one where a jury unfortunately did something that is not following the instructions of the rule of law, and the judge should not have entered a verdict on it.
If the verdict form had said $1, what would be the difference?
I think in that case, I think the cases that Appalese cites, there's a whole list of them, Costner, Nichols, Chadron Energy, all of those say that unless it goes clearly against the way the jury's verdict is going to stand and that we cannot contest it here, we have something different. They found that there was some damage and then they entered zero. And there's just no way those two things can be
corrected. Getting back to Justice Miller's question, what did State Farm consider that? Was it negligence or liability?
Only negligence of their insured.
Okay, is that different than tortious conduct? Admitting the tortious conduct? Well, let me put it another way. If they admitted that they were negligent, what did they admit? Breach of duty and what else?
That's a good question, Your Honor. If you go through the steps, and we don't have the exact stipulation in front of us. I don't think it's in the
record. Well, what is negligence in our case law? Is it breach of duty?
Breach of the duty, and some proximate cause, yes.
And damages?
Yes.
Are the jury instructions in our record?
I believe they are, Your Honor.
And did it have the customary, what were the elements that the plaintiff was required to prove?
Before the plaintiffs can recover against the defendant, the plaintiffs must prove, by the greater of the weight of the evidence, each and all of the following: that the accident was a proximate cause of some damage to the plaintiffs Opal Lohman and David Lohman, and the nature and extent of that damage. So they had to except both, including the accident was a proximate cause of some damage.
So what the stipulation therefore must have been was that the State Farm's insured was negligent and that negligence was a proximate cause of the accident.
I'm not certain on the second step, Your Honor, because as I recall, there was some argument that perhaps some of her pain and suffering was caused by something other than this accident. So
well, the pattern jury instruction has two proximate cause elements: negligence, proximate cause of the accident, and accident, proximate cause of the damages. The first one isn't instructed on, so it must have been directed out, stipulated out. It wasn't instructed on, and there's no complaint about that, right?
Correct.
All right.
In closing, I'd just like to emphasize again that we are not arguing that the jury verdicts shouldn't stand if they award damages, even minimal damages, in a case like this. The question is whether or not, when a jury specifically makes a finding of fact that someone had some damage, a specific finding of fact that plaintiff had some damage that was proximately caused by the incident in question, by the defendant, can a judge then allow a verdict to be entered in an amount of zero when the jury clearly has found that there is some damage and that damage was proximately caused by the defendant? So we would ask that instead of using the Nebraska Supreme Court rules of construction for jury verdicts, that we do what the statutes direct us, and that is to send this back for a new trial.
Do we have all the verdict forms that were submitted to the jury in our record? Every single one?
Your Honor, this is the case I'm arguing. I will. Mr. Chytosky is much more familiar with the record. He was an attorney on the case originally. I was not. I admit that I just hate to misrepresent things to the court, and I'm sure Mr. Chytosky, he's a very honorable attorney. I'll allow him to answer that to get a more accurate answer than I might give you. I apologize for not knowing for certain. I just hate to lead you astray. Thank you. May I be seated?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very much. Mr. Shatkowski, good morning.
Good morning. May I approach?
You may.
May it please the court. Opposing counsel, my name is Paul Shatkowski. I'm the attorney representing the Appalachian State Farm in this matter. This matter was tried back in May of 2014 as an underinsured motorist claim against State Farm. Generally speaking, the role of the jury in this type of case is determine two things. Number one, liability and damages. The jury doesn't decide whether or not State Farm is responsible to pay underinsured motorist benefits to the claimant. The jury is empowered with deciding the amount of damages the plaintiff is entitled to recover.
Did you admit to liability?
What's that?
Did you admit to liability?
We did, Your Honor. With respect to the underlying accident, we admitted to the jury that Mrs. Lohman was not negligent in any way, shape, or form in contributing to the underlying accident.
Did you? I'm not sure what the stipulation entailed. Can you? Not the life of the insurance part side of this, like a. Assuming, you know, we'll accept liability in the insurance speak, we're talking negligence versus liability versus some other words.
Yes.
What did you do in the stipulation?
The stipulation said that Mrs. Lohman was not negligent, that the underlying driver was negligent and responsible for causing...
Was negligent.
Yes. And we did. There was no stipulation with respect to whether or not Mrs. Lohman was entitled to recover any damages from State Farm. The stipulation had to go to the accident that the other driver caused the accident. And to the extent that Mrs. Lohman was able to show the proximate nexus between the accident and damages, she was entitled to recover that. In the ordinary course of these cases, the next step is for the plaintiff to put on evidence of damages, evidence in the form of lost wages, medical expenses, lost time from work, loss of enjoyment of life. That's where this case took an unusual turn. The plaintiff intentionally decided during the course of trial to remove her claim for lost wages and medical expenses.
What happened to the husband's loss of consortium claim? Was that submitted to the jury?
I don't believe that was ever submitted to the jury. Your Honor, that's my recollection. I haven't looked at that, but I don't believe that was ever submitted to the jury. The jury was basically told two things. Number one, with respect to whether or not Mrs. Lohman was negligent in causing the collision, they were told you have to find in her favor because the parties have stipulated that she was not contributorily negligent in causing the collision. With respect to damages that were proximately caused, the jury was instructed that the plaintiff had to show the proximate by the weight of the evidence.
Did you stipulate to proximate cause?
We did not stipulate to proximate cause, Your Honor. But before it ever got to the jury, the question regarding damages was by the plaintiff's own motion. It wasn't a motion in limine. It was the plaintiff's own motion. They said, do not consider all of these other elements of damages. Don't consider medical expenses. Don't consider lost wages. Don't consider all that because the plaintiff has already recovered for those damages. In the context of damages only, the plaintiff said, we're only focused on alleged traumatic brain injury. We're only focused on headaches. And only look at the evidence that was presented by both parties to determine whether or not she has damages in the form of ongoing headaches.
Counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Was the jury given a verdict form that would have allowed them to find that the plaintiff hadn't met her burden to proximately cause damages?
They were given the standard jury instruction that said, number one, liability was not an issue, so if you find that the plaintiff had damages that were approximately caused by the collision, then you must find the approximate amount or give a verdict with respect to the damages.
Counsel, I think you're answering the question different than what you were asked. The question was there more than one verdict form? And as I'm looking at instruction number 2C, the effective findings section, it says, if the plaintiffs have met their burden of proof, then your verdict must be for the plaintiffs, and you should complete verdict form number 1. If the plaintiffs have not met their burden of proof, then your verdict must be for the defendant, and you should complete verdict form number 1. Thus, this would indicate to me there's only one verdict form. Is that right?
I believe that's correct.
And so, to answer specifically, there was no form that would have permitted the jury to say, we find for the defendant, period.
That's correct. That's correct. Because the underlying, she was entitled, or liability was not an issue. It was all about determining damages. The problem was, the way the case was tried, the jury was handcuffed because they did not present all the evidence of damages. Within the context of damages only, the jury was challenged on headaches. And it said, if you do not believe that she has headaches, don't give her any damages for the headaches. And that's the way the case was presented. And so the question on appeal then is, with respect to damages for headaches, is the court's acceptance of their award of zero damages consistent with the evidence? Is it clearly wrong? And if you look at the whole body of evidence that was presented with respect to only headaches, because that's the way they framed this case up, they didn't want the jury to do what they normally do, take a look at the whole case and determine what the total damages are, they said, that's already been taken care of. We only want you to look at headaches. Well, that's not what underinsured motorist claims, that's not what these cases, how they're normally presented. It's normally, tell us what the total damages are with respect to these cases, and then we compare them to what the plaintiff recovered, and this is what the judge does. Compare that to what the plaintiff has recovered from the underlying carrier. Take a look at what they've recovered from MedPay benefits from the carrier, and determine whether or not they're above that number. And if they're above that number, that gives them an entitlement to uninsured motorist benefits. They elected to do something different, and that was a trial tactic that they employed. And they took that out, and they said, we only want to now focus on headaches. There's no dispute that Ms. Loman is entitled to recover for any damages, but that's already been taken care of, so don't worry about that either. So all we now want you to do in the context of damages is tell us whether or not she has headaches, or if you believe that she is suffering daily from headaches.
So how does the ultimate finding, how does the verdict form, how does that conform to Nebraska case law?
It's the first, it conforms to liability, and then it conforms to damages. With respect to liability, they have to determine whether or not she was responsible for causing the collision.
But don't we have cases that say you can't find for the plaintiff and show no damages?
We do have two cases that were cited by...
And what are we supposed to do with those?
Well, in the context of those two cases, liability was an issue when it was decided in favor of the plaintiff in both cases. But in both cases, even though there was evidence of damages, the jury awarded zero damages. In this case, the evidence of damages, the jury was told, she did have damages, told by the appellant, she did have damages, but she's already recovered from those damages. She's collected that money already. And so they changed it. Those plaintiffs never recovered a dime, even though there was evidence presented that they did have injuries and corresponding damages. In this case, the injuries corresponding damages, the way it was presented by the plaintiff, and the fact that they took damages out of the question for the jury by their own volition, that was their strategy, she had recovered damages. They wanted to, within the context of damages only, they wanted to focus the jury's award only on these headaches if They met their burden of proof with respect to showing that the headaches had approximate nexus to the accident. And the jury, on that question, on whether or not she had damages in the form of headaches, they decided no. And the question is there evidence in the record to substantiate that finding?
So you would, what's the proposition of law that you think should emerge from this case if we were to affirm?
Well, I think it goes to invited error. And I think it goes to the tactic that was employed in this case. How can you say the jury verdict was wrong when, in fact, that's what they challenged the jury to do, only in the context of headaches? They changed what the jury was empowered to do in this case. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions before I sit down?
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal? 40 seconds, Ms. Culley.
Please, the court. Mr. Stasky, first I want to thank him for clarifying for me, including the court, the question about whether or not there was a second verdict form, because that is crucial. The court has hit on really the nail on the head here. The way the jury instructions were presented, the jury was told that you must find that there are damages for the plaintiff. I have to agree with that in the jury instructions. And they did.
And nobody objected.
And the jury specifically found that she had some damages and that those damages were proximately caused by the defendant. I mean, that's what the case is. This idea of introducing parole evidence or they invited it, I don't think that really is relevant. We're all guessing. We're going to the Nebraska Supreme Court rules of interpreting jury findings, and we can't really do that. We're left with what the jury did. And the jury found she had some damages and then, in violation of the statute, didn't give her any, and the court should not have entered a verdict on that. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is McCoolidge versus Orvetsky. Mr. White, good morning to you. Let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom.